Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we have an interview with Stephen Colletti. Stephen, of course, rose to fame initially via Laguna Beach. He was on the first two seasons of that show, and then he was on One Tree Hill for a while, and then he was recently on The Traitors, and this year he sort of had somewhat of a resurgence in a big year, his biggest in a long time, because he was on The Traitors and he made it far. He was a very loyal, faithful. He was sort of the resident nice guy. Everybody really liked him. And then he was a big part of the Laguna Beach reunion that happened on the Roku channel this spring. And then also the second season of his show, Everyone is Doing Great, came out after, I think, 5 years away. Initially it was on Hulu. Now they're both on Netflix. That came out later this spring. And then he also became a father. And so it's been a really big year for Stephen. And he was on the show as part of a big group when I did a junket for the Laguna Beach reunion. But when the opportunity came to get more time with him, I jumped at it. And we had a really great conversation. We talked a lot about fame and reality TV and Stephen's sort of complicated or maybe up and down relationships with both of those things over the years. And also, it's great because those things like really play into what Everyone is Doing Great is about, which is like centers on a cast of four people who used to be on a really popular show together and sort of what their life has been like in the years since. So it's very much drawn from his real life. And I just really loved our conversation. He's such a great guy and I'm really happy that he's having this big moment this year. So yeah, I'm gonna keep it short up top here. I will have a bunch of Bravo stuff coming up for you. A Real Housewives of Rhode Island end of the season deep dive. I'll do an episode about a bunch of the latest happenings from like the younger shows, The Valley and The City, Next Gen NYC, et cetera. So a lot more to come there, but I wanted to get this interview out because we did it at the beginning of June. And it's a really great one. I really enjoyed talking to Stephen. So keep listening for my chat with Stephen Colletti. Check out seasons 1 and 2 of Everyone is Doing Great, which are both streaming on Netflix now. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll see you a couple more times this week. I want to gab. All right. Today, we're gabbing with Stephen Colletti. He is the co-creator and writer of Everyone's Doing Great, season 2 of which is out on Netflix now. You also, of course, know Stephen from Laguna Beach, One Tree Hill, most recently The Traitors. Stephen, it's great to have you back on the pod. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. It's good to be here. It's funny. You're talking about Traitors and One Tree Hill and Laguna. I was like, that's been... It's been a fun run the last few years.
I'm sure. And we'll get into all of that. But most recently, season 2 of Everyone's Doing Great dropped on Netflix. Does it feel good to have that out in the world? I'm sure the feedback's been positive.
Oh, man. And I realized I called Everyone's Doing Great One Tree Hill. And what I was just saying the last couple months with EDG and with Laguna and with Traitors. But yeah, sorry. I have a newborn and so the sleep is minimal and we get half power brain, but we're good.
Power through.
Yeah, man. Look, I thank you for first of all acknowledging Everyone's Doing Great. Like we cannot be more excited to have it out and to as wide of an audience as possible through Netflix. You know, we did Hulu the first season and we did some other territories on Paramount Plus internationally and that was a big win for us, but it was kind of a goal for season 2. You know, we had a lot of folks that were reaching out wondering how they could get it. And if they couldn't get Paramount Plus or Hulu, of course, they had to wait until it was available and only in some countries on demand. And we still couldn't get it everywhere. So we really wanted to get it out wide. And, you know, we fought long and hard to get here. There were some opportunities along the way to maybe pause and say, okay, you know what? This is where the business is at right now. We're going through a major contraction and to even have an opportunity to get it up on a certain platform, maybe we should take it. But we held out and it's been a journey, but thankfully it's been very rewarding to actually arrive at this point. And, you know, it's not just for ourselves who live and breathe it every day, but also for just everyone who's participated in the show. We have an incredible amount of creatives involved that have come in on favors, come in on a buddy discount, or maybe it's just their, you know, their first break, if you will. And because we work on a limited budget, this is, you know, a lot of folks that we're working with, for them to have this opportunity to, you know, point to a show that they worked on that's now on Netflix has been really, really awesome.
So great that both seasons now are on Netflix, because I feel like there's nothing worse than as a viewer of television to like have to bop around and figure out where you can find something to. Now you have this new home that's a global home for both seasons. It must be like a relief.
Yeah, I remember the it is a relief in actually getting the show to really where we wanted to, and where we were telling folks that were asking about the show, why is it taking so long? We were asking them to just be patient with us, because we've got a plan and we're trying to execute it. And we knew that there was a good chance that we wouldn't be able to execute it. But Thankfully, that's been really awesome about the community that supported the show from the beginning, the people involved. I mean, we want to get it there for them, but everyone has always been very supportive. And that's whether it's our crowdfunding, EDG Heroes, even our subscribers on Instagram. When we get on and tell them, like, look, we don't have a major update. We're still kind of working through our plan here. We'd be disappointed to have to share that with them, but what we would get in return is just a lot of love and support and encouragement. And that was priceless. So that helped us, keep going.
I think about some other shows that were added to Netflix sort of after their first season, and one of those being Schitt's Creek, and that famously found like a much bigger audience as it got put on Netflix for its older season. Have you found that more people have discovered the show existing at all and going into the first season and then obviously having another season to watch? Has that been part of the feedback or some of the data?
You know, we've run into some people that have come from other countries that said that they just watched it there. And that just gives me goosebumps.
That's
talking
cool
about it, because that was a goal. And we were at a Sony had an LA screenings event, and there were some people from Singapore, and they're like, oh, we just watched your show. We're from Singapore. Like, oh, did you watch it when you got in here? Like, no, we watched it in Singapore before we left. And we're like, oh my gosh, it's incredible. You know, I'll never forget that first call when our rep, actually, his name's Paul Littman over at Sony. And he was a Saturday, and he called to ensure that we were okay to get the show translated in over 30 languages, because it was going to go worldwide on Netflix. And that was, it was a Saturday. It was my brother's wedding. I was just getting ready to walk out and actually marry him and his wife, Annika. I also was preparing my best man speech. So there was a lot going on that day.
When it rains, of course.
I was like, I can't believe this is happening. But yes, to hear, you know, firsthand, to speak to somebody who just come from Singapore, who watched our show there, and they said that, you know, they're showing it with their friends. And we're very curious, like, how is the comedy translating? How are the subtitles? Like, are you getting it? Are you enjoying it? And we have been hearing some positive feedback from around the world. I mean, just to name a few, France, Sweden. I know there's some folks in Sweden, Norway that are just discovering it, that are folks that might have been following us here and there over the years, or maybe just found us and remembered us from previous shows. We're getting a lot of people that are just now getting clued into the fact that this show exists. And we love to see that. It keeps us going as we've been on a marathon of trying to promote the show and do our little grassroots marketing campaign. And so when you have folks that are saying, what is this? Like, what are Nathan and Chase doing here? Our character, yeah. James and I's characters from One Tree Hill. We're on a TikTok live, and somebody writes that in the comments. We're like, yes, hello, how are you? We got something for you.
You want people to make that connection. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The show itself is a meditation on fame, life after being on a popular show. And it's interesting because for you, that could really apply to two experiences in your life. It's sort of like a double whammy for you, like with the Laguna and One Tree Hill of it all. Obviously, you and James were on One Tree Hill together. But I'd love for you to talk a little bit about like some of the ups and downs that come with that experience, and like maybe how you, which ones you specifically drew from for writing this show.
Well, you know, I think early on, there really was not an expectation of fame coming from Laguna Beach. To me, I felt like we were so fortunate to have this opportunity to network, to meet some people who worked at MTV, worked in entertainment. A lot of us that got on the show had some, you know, aspirations of, you know, big goals, ambitious goals, and wanting to work whether in entertainment or maybe if you're with fashion or something, where, you know, if you create a brand now and start, you know, building from there, like you have a good foundation. So I think that there was you know, a focus on trying to build something, but not any of this fame that comes with it. So for me personally, it was quite a shock and something I took a very long time to try to understand and get comfortable with. And how I did that at that time was just try to bury myself in work. You know, I moved myself from reality and just was, you know, taking acting classes, you know, going out auditions, trying to get gigs. And thankfully, I was staying busy at that time because I was, you know, just getting started. And I was leveraging really this attention in my mind from Laguna Beach into hopefully some opportunities of what I really wanted to do. So I was just really focused on that. And I kind of did that in a way, burying my head in the sands just so I could block out the fact that people were actually watching the show and remembering us and it was leaving a mark with them, because you know I had my own uncomfortable, you know, feelings about what the show ultimately was. So that time it was, I would say, a little, frankly, actually easier to handle, because it was like, let's just keep going, you know, let's try to, you know, take these opportunities that are coming my way at that age and use them wisely. And I think the difference between after One Tree Hill was done, you know, I started working on One Tree Hill and I just, you know, wanted to work on that show more. I wanted, it's a great place for me to, you know, to
cut your teeth,
get the reps on set. Yeah. Cause you study so much in acting classes. Those are great, doing scene study. I think it's important, but there's no opportunity for experience than actually being on sets. And whether you're even acting in scenes or just working on them, you know, that's where you really need to see how things move. And so being able to work on that show for years, I will admit, I think I got settled. I got complacent. I got to a place of like, okay, even in between seasons, if I didn't book an audition I was really excited about, I was like, screw it. I'm going back to the show anyway. So I've got a job. And again, so there was a little bit of a, I felt like my foot was getting let off the gas a bit. And I was like, okay, I think I got this. You know, I feel like I could handle on where things are going and another job will come. What's interesting is once One Tree Hill was definitely finished and we knew there was going to be no further seasons, going back to LA and after a couple of auditions that don't go well or you don't get the job, then it's like, okay, that feeling. So it's really a lot of it's pulled from that time after One Tree Hill. And we, James and I like to say that it's, you know, there's a version of ourselves that if we did not mature after those years, you know, how we approached the work and our lives during that time of like, okay, trying to really find that next steady gig, there's a world where it could have gone really south, right? Sure. There's paths. Yeah.
And I can imagine.
Yes. And so we wanted to play with that idea of like, okay, what if, you know, these guys are making poor choices or have not been able to find a new gear, have not been able to mature and grow up, have not been able to move on. And let's see what that world would look like. So
did you have moments like that where you felt that you were stuck or you were making decisions that you wouldn't have made in hindsight?
Look, I think that what the guys are doing in the show, there's a lot of really dark and bad decisions. And thankfully, I can report that I have not been in that space, but I can definitely relate to a space of not understanding exactly what's coming next or where I'm going, thinking that I have an idea. You know, I've, you know, a good work ethic that has been instilled in me by my parents is just to keep going, to keep pushing, you know, but there's definitely been times where you feel like you're pushing and you're not getting the results. And we talk about that, especially with my character in the show, like he's really trying his hardest, but it seems like the harder he tries, the harder he fails. And then he's kind of spirals or makes very bad decisions. I think, you know, there's definitely times where I've been there, not sure what the next move was going to be. And you kind of just, that those are some dark days where I remember lonely, maybe you're single, you're in an apartment in LA, and if you either just had a bad audition or you just lost an audition that you're really hoping for, it's very helpless. And those, you know, moments of doubt creep in of like, okay, where am I going here? Like I have an idea of what my 5-year plan is, 10-year plan, but it's a lot of it's out of my hands. Like, are we okay with that? And I always said through my 20s, I was like, look, at the end of the day, if I was not going to be able to provide for my family, the lack of security in this business, if I did not find a way to achieve some sort of security, I would probably move on. But I did realize that at some point jobs will always end in this business. You know, the years that you put on and the community that you build, that really kind of, for me, is what developed, you know, more of that security.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe that getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. One way to close that gap and fight the stigma around mental health support is to be open about your own positive experience in seeking help, to encourage your loved ones to do the same and experience those same benefits. Because really, the numbers do speak for themselves. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists, making it the world's largest online therapy platform. It has served over 6 million people globally and boasts an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, which is based on over 1.7 million client reviews. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. Season 2 of Everyone's Doing Great has this moment where you all come back together for the first time since the show had aired. And you just had that moment with Laguna Beach, and you alluded to like complicated feelings that you've had about the show, probably particularly in those first several years outside of it. But like, what was it really like getting the band back together, so to speak, after so much time, given just like, again, sort of internally for you and also externally, I mean, some of the just stuff that's happened over the years. Did that like validate anything? Did it like sort of, did it feel like a true full circle moment where you could fully accept this whole experience and what it was like?
You know, I found that the whole experience, like summed up in a couple words, it was surreal. Mm-hmm. It was funny. It was fun, but it was also weird. You know, it was almost like it was such an odd social experiment back in 2004. And here's another one. Let's get everyone from high school back together. Let's watch tape of them of what happened in high school and let's break it down. So that's why I say, you know, surreal and weird, but that's the... For me, the beauty of it is it's so unique to have a reunion like that. The show was one of a kind when it first came out. You know, it was a new style for folks, and we really wanted to create something that would leave an impression on people, because it was unlike a reunion that they might be used to seeing. And while those shows that are on now that have immediate reunions in the reality world, like that's great. It's fantastic for fans to be able to get that instant reaction. But when we're talking about a show that, you know, these kids were not prepared for what was going to come their way after the show had actually aired, to have them all come together and realize they've all been on different journeys and we've all been comfortable with the show at different times. Right. But I think now we're all at a more close and secure spot with it, that we can come together and celebrate it. And actually, let's have fun with the fact that, you know what, an audience, it's really struck a chord with an audience back in the day. And that is unique and that is special. That's why people are in storytelling. That's why I'm in storytelling. So yeah. Let's go ahead and celebrate that and leave folks feeling, you know, having a positive reaction to what that experience has been for us, seeing that we've come out of it okay. We're all still friends. We can look back and take the piss out of ourselves because what idiots we were back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it really has been a joy to be able to embark on that journey. I'm so thankful to have the first COVID meeting on Zoom where we all got together. And it's like, this was nice. And then the podcast, and we'd have one-on-ones with folks. Hey, this is great. But the one thing that was missing was, let's get everybody together in the same spot. So full circle moment for sure.
Yeah. And I also think that, like, obviously the having your high school experience on tape and as part of a reality show and kind of a warped reality show in a way, that's not relatable to a lot of people. But I do think that one of the things that I took away from that special was like, this is also kind of just like a regular high school reunion for you guys. And that's a lot of thing that everybody can relate to. And I think it really kind of hammered home that you all were teenagers at that time and you've grown so much since then. And it was like true adults looking back at themselves as teenagers and like not holding anybody to account for what they did 20 years ago. Like that part to me really stood out after watching, I felt.
Yeah. You know, and I think that there's no moment that's more emblematic of that than what you saw with Lauren and Kristen and their conversations.
Totally agree.
Leading up to the end there at the bonfire was a really beautiful moment. And yeah, I mean, again, feel fortunate that we can do that in that way. And everyone feels that way together again, coming to that same point of like, look, I mean, we're different people in high school. I mean, there's shades of the personalities. They're still there, right? But the way we react emotionally is completely different. Thank God.
Did doing the podcast with Kristen, did that help? Did that help you do that before doing this reunion in terms of just processing everything? Because you guys got into the minutia on that podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, at that point, I was all in on going in.
Okay.
I think, and I always feel like I was a little late to the game on being comfortable with the show.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until that COVID gathering over Zoom and that conversation. And it's really when I started to discover that people were going through the same thing that I was with the show. They felt uncomfortable about it, very embarrassed at certain moments. And it wasn't something that they went around bragging about or feeling proud of because of really what we did on the show. And after that, when we had that very cathartic moment together and you realize you can laugh at it now and we got to give ourselves a little more grace, I started to, give myself a lot more grace with it. And and that really set it off. And then from there, I was like, you know what? I want to go in. Because I had never seen the show since they first sent us these VHS tapes the night before. And I watch it. I go, oh, man. And I go, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll ever watch it again. But and this was before podcasts. And now you see the podcasts come out and you see some other rewatches. And I'm like, you know what? I think it would be fun at this point to go back and watch everything and just put it all out there. Because, look, I've learned that it's going to be a talking point until the day I die. More than happy to talk about it. Because again, the fact that people, it left a mark on folks back in the day, and I've had people come up to me and share experiences of, relating to stuff that was happening with different characters within the show. And I was like, that's awesome. That is something positive that it did.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you've landed there because I feel like that's such an interesting idea of public figures who have been part of massive TV shows or big movies and they get, like, as you said, like it's a talking point for the rest of their lives. And I don't think it defines you by any means. I mean, you have two or more really seminal things that people attach to you. And like, but I think that certain people don't even get to where you are with it. I think that certain actors and people, they can't accept that. And maybe it's because they feel too defined by it or what have you. You know more about this than I do. But like, I'm glad that you found your way to this point because I feel like there's a gratitude in that. And there's like I think it makes fans feel better about it too, you know?
Yes. And I think that, as you're saying that, and look, I know everyone's journey is completely different, but one thing that was hard for me to see was when I was on Traitors and it obviously said that I was from One Tree Hill.
Yes.
And a lot of people were giving me blowback from it. And it was a lot of comments like, oh, he hates the show. Like he doesn't want to be associated with it or anything like that. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, man, it's really disappointing to hear that. The Chiron, sorry, I was trying to think of the name. Chiron at the bottom of the screen, it says my name. And then it said
One Tree Hill.
And look, I'd never even thought about any sort of blowback or the perception it might give to people by, picking One Tree Hill. But I realize now when you look back on all the years of opportunities to go and discuss the show and, that I would pass up and maybe some, interviews of what I shared my feelings about the show, or at least how I felt about it. I can see why maybe some people would have said that, but I was hoping that after, doing the podcast and celebrating the show in that sense, that people would see that. But I didn't, it was disappointing to hear and feel. I was like, man, I can't believe that this is like something that people are taking from the show. So, it's interesting what you said earlier about you feel like some people, they can't quite reconcile those feelings because they feel so certain about it and they get stuck in that, I am grateful for the fact that I've had these opportunities to learn more about how I felt with the show and how other people involved with the show feel. And it's opened me up to being able to explore it more. So, yeah.
Obviously, after Laguna, you threw yourself into acting, took acting classes, landed on One Tree Hill for years. In that time frame, or maybe even after that, were there reality TV opportunities that you that came your way that you turned down that you just felt? Because obviously you end up doing Traders years later, but in between then, were there opportunities that came your way that you were like, I'm not ready to do that yet?
Yeah, you know, it's, and look, honestly, back to another reason the Chiron thing was interesting to me is because I didn't do anything to deserve a spot on Laguna Beach, right? I did not showcase a skill. I did not audition. I did not work hard at all. I literally did nothing. And I just happened to end up on that show. So, you know, there's obviously much more pride in like the work that I did to eventually get on One Tree Hill and stay on One Tree Hill. And then the work over multiple years of being on that show. When I was done with that first season of Laguna, that fame that came with it and the recognition, when I did contribute absolutely nothing other than just like my story, if you will, but just show up, you know, I couldn't feel a sense of pride of that. And it didn't make me feel good that there was this recognition. I felt there was the imposter syndrome, of course, in that scenario. So it really put reality in a place with me that I was not comfortable with. And of course, also feeling taken advantage of with the you know, the editing of the show. So to me, right, I always put reality in that box that mm-hmm. I would never go back and do that again, because I'm not going to put myself in that position where I'm completely out of control of who I am. What
it makes sense.
What really defines me. Yes. And so, you know, yeah, all sorts of shows. And it's interesting, even though there's some shows that are competition shows, like I remember getting offered Dancing with the Stars back in the day. You know, there was every season of The Hills, they kept coming back to me wanting me to do it. And I was like, there's just no way. And like, there's like, it's a different show now. Like we can kind of like, we could talk about the story. And I'm like, now again, like this is, yeah. I've been spending these years, saying, you know, look, that's not really who I am. I want to be able to, you know, carve out something else for me. So yeah, because of the Laguna, I really looked at all reality and was like, no, I did more than enough for a lifetime and a half with that one season of Laguna or two. And so let's just not. And
yeah,
you know what? There's some that I look back on, like, you know, it would have been fun, especially now. I could say, as I started to get more comfortable with, you know, my place in that show and seeing the type of, say, reality competition that's out there, of course, like Traders, which is just an opportunity that's so great as a fan of the show that you just can't pass up. So, you know, it the reality just comes such a long way. I can now see that there are safer places to put yourself out there, I think, though it is putting yourself out there. But
it is. But it's this isn't focusing on your personal life, though. This is
yes,
the competition. It's obviously it's you as a personality and a person, but. Is that what got you to do Traders, that you just were such a fan of the show? You just liked it?
It's one of the reasons. Yeah. I think the game is such a challenge and it scared the crap out of me that I had to step into it and see what would happen. You know, sure. I knew that there was a season 3 they got offered. I was like, ooh, interesting. I was like, I would do this. I remember thinking to myself, oh man, this would be a lot of fun. But thankfully I could not do that season. So it was like, all right, this kind of makes things a little easier. Like I can't do it. So we have to pass. And then it came back around the next year and I was available during that time. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Here we go. This is going to be interesting.
There we go.
You know, how are you going to say no now? And you know, yeah, those conversations with myself, you know, and I should also say a lot with my family and friends, me just kind of sharing mm-hmm. my feelings about it, because I knew I wanted to do it. But for so many years, I was saying no. I had to kind of break down those barriers and allow myself to say, hey, look, we're going to step into this. There's some risk involved. There's some stuff out of your control. But you know what? Maybe now, as the years have gone on, you're in a much more emotionally stable position to actually put yourself out there in a way. And you really have an opportunity, now that I have a better understanding of who I am, of sharing with people, you know, who I am. And it might be a little different from what they saw back in the day. So yeah, I think, you know, too great of an opportunity to pass up. And I did have some conversations with the producers and they told me, like, look, we're not like worried about this, like the reality kind of drama that you might be used to. You know, the game mm-hmm. comes first. And then, you know, there's some, maybe some personal interactions that are, you know, involved in the game. So,
yeah, but you don't seem like somebody who is, as an adult sort of predisposed to having that drama. I think that that's on the traders. That feels like the people who are used to that, they lean into that. And you don't have to get involved with that if you don't find yourself there, you know?
And I, you know, you're right. And I was worried for them. I was like, I hope that they don't think, of course, my mind goes to Laguna. They're like, okay, there was this kind of bad boy perception.
Sure.
There were some moments where, you know, there's like a famous Cabo episode where things got a little out of control. And so like, I was like, I wonder if they think that there's some of that, like that guy might be in there and maybe there's a way, or maybe he'll show up in this show. So I, again, telling them, I'm like, look, I'm not going to be the loudest voice in the room. I am much more, you know, calm and collective these days. And I don't know if you guys even want me for the show, but you know, they said, look, there are people that have the big personalities and there's also, it's nice to have some people that are more tranquil, if you will. And yeah, and I'm thankful for that because it allowed me to have a position on the show and also not be the only one. They said that I would not be the only one in that position. There's a couple people that they expect Absolutely. To be a little more low key. And so that also made me feel comfortable because I was like, I don't want people to I don't want to stick out as like, you know, there's the or least like entertaining person.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Like, why is he on the show if he's not going to like participate?
Not everybody can be Lisa Rinna and Portia and, you know what I mean?
Yes, they can't,
not
everybody Michael can Rappaport. Be
that person. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I also think it's interesting when you talk about like deciding to do the Traitors, you know, after sort of assessing where reality TV has gotten, where you had gotten as a person.
Yeah.
Because I think that one of the reasons that people do Traitors is like to sort of, it's sort of like a rising tide lifts all boats in their career. And like with this new attention to come from the show, it has to be great for everyone's doing great. It has to be great for any other things that people are working on these casts. And like, that's something that you as a Laguna Beach cast didn't get back in the day, which was like the social media followings, that people having a built-in way to continue, you know, following your career and every decision that you had made, like in a more personal way. So I feel like doing this now, it's almost like you're getting what you maybe should have gotten 20 years ago. And just in terms of like some of that, I don't know, just some of that built in, not that you didn't have built in fans and stuff like that, but it's a different level with social media.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's so funny how everything, and it's kind of what I was alluding to at the beginning of this conversation.
Yeah.
Like, it's so funny how everything just kind of happened all at once. You know, I took Traitors not knowing when the Laguna reunion would happen and not knowing when Everyone Is Doing Great season two would come out.
Isn't it?
And yeah, right. And then all of a sudden, I do feel like it's universe almost rewarding me in a way for saying, you know what, you've gone through a roller coaster with your feelings, for reality based on your experience back in 2005, and you're stepping outside your comfort zone here. And, you know, for that, you know, here's a couple rewards. We're going to be able to have the Laguna reunion happen not too long after. And then everything will lead up to Everyone's Doing Great. And you know what? If it's got a couple extra sets of eyeballs that are finding Everyone's Doing Great from those shows, then what an amazing perk of it all. But yeah, it does feel like it's been a fun run the beginning half of this year. And I'm so happy that everything worked out well in that sense. There was never going to be... you know, there's a risk. Maybe what if something happened on Traitors and, what if you lost control and then all of a sudden you become like, you know, somebody where nobody wants to work with you or something.
Pariah.
Or you could think of like a crazy scenario where all of a sudden I see red and revert back to being 18 years old again and have a moment of weakness. And then that affects other projects. So I there was some concern. I just, you know, made sure I was like, look, we would never do that, and like, let's not let that like take away from this experience. But yes, I feel fortunate that it's all been able to happen at this run.
Good.
You know, I'll say this: there was a lot of what I was thinking about when the show's done.
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought about, and I kind of alluded to it, but they didn't use it when I got banished at the round table. My thoughts on being on the show, and a lot of it was at the banquet. Everyone spoke at the banquet. Of course, we're going to be able to use everyone's little spiel about why they were there.
Sure.
Right. And for me, it was because it was a major challenge. There was a major fear of stepping into this challenge and finding a lot of reasons not to do it, but going ahead and doing it. And for that, I was rewarded with not only meeting all those wonderful people in the castle, which is what I said there, just, you know, really felt like we had a great cast. We all got along very well. And everyone from different walks of life, but also, you know, just feeling like it grew up a little bit, having taken that step and rewarded with such an amazing experience and being with those people. So I spoke about it at the banquet and at the circle there after banishment. So yeah, it's a big part of it for me.
Yeah, that's great. One of the last things I want to ask you about, you know, I think something that's a little bit underexplored maybe in show business is like, oftentimes young guys like yourself, when you enter the spotlight, you get sort of pegged as a heartthrob. And there's a lot of like connotation to that. And there's a lot of expectation built into that. And I'm curious, and you were young, you were a teenager. And like, I guess I'm curious what that was like for you, because that must have also brought along some expectations or maybe a balance of like leaning into that when you are young, but then also feeling like you're boxed in and like, I'm so much more than that. And you've proven that in your career, obviously, but like, in hindsight, how was teenage Steven or young 20s Steven like dealing with that label or that sort of box that you could have been put in?
You know, I think I never really thought about being put in a box in a certain way that it would be a negative effect on my life. I felt like I was fortunate enough to have opportunities because of the show. And I also felt uncomfortable with them because, as I alluded to earlier, I didn't work hard to get Laguna Beach. And so feeling like you've got all these opportunities at your fingertips from something that I was a victim of circumstance, if you will, it put me in a place of like, wow, like, you know, you actually are a little lucky son of a bitch to be able to be in this position to have some opportunities, and you better use them wisely and not take it for granted. So there was the imposter syndrome with it all. I didn't really truly accept it as like a real thing because I was kind of in denial about how many people were actually watching the show. And maybe there's some corners, you know, and people are throwing around certain terms. But, you know, the way I would look at people that I looked up to the business and, you know, and say, look, that's a body of work that's deserving of the accolades or being put up on some sort of a pedestal. So I really just did not accept it and see it as valid, because I was like, look, I was on a show on MTV that was ridiculous and from my point of view, because you know of the way it was put together, and for that I should not be deserving any sort of praise, but I'm going to continue to, you know, work to show people that, you know, I do have something to offer and I do care about the work and care about storytelling and the art and the craft that is in acting, and hopefully people will see that as who I really am, and let that, you know, fall into classifying, you know, what they think of me. But yeah, I really did not take it seriously and focus on it too much, because it just was not warranted, I felt like.
Yeah, no, I think that obviously in the couple of decades since then, like, I think your career speaks for itself. You've gotten to a point now where you've created a show, co-written a show that is successful, well-reviewed, well-received by audiences. It's got a second season. Like, there's so much to be proud of in that, and the longevity that you've been able to sustain in a really difficult industry. You should feel very proud of that. I hope that you do.
Oh, thank you. There's always still new ground you're chasing.
Yeah,
it's so funny. You remember that McConaughey speech where he's got his Oscar? He's talking about he's chasing the guy 10 years. Yeah. I remember watching that back in the day, going like, what in the hell is he talking about? That's like, where's he going with all this? And I was just trying to, like, you know, you're kind of thinking in your 20s, and you're just you're like one or two steps ahead, but not multiple steps ahead. But now, you know, thankfully, being able to still be relevant in a way to even go on a show like Traitors, to have it work out with everyone is doing great. Yeah, I'm definitely proud of the work that it's taken to get there. And for that, there's also a drive of like, all right, you know, where do we want to challenge ourselves next? And now I understand almost what he said back then, because I was like, okay, this is where we're going to learn what we did in our 20s, which was rest on our laurels a little bit. We're not going to let that happen. We're going to, you know, keep pushing and seeing how far we can take this. So yeah, there's still a lot to do. There's honestly a feeling of just getting started. And I say because I'm just getting comfortable, I think, with who I am and where I come from. And it's, ever, you know, I'm 40 now, and this is what my 30s were about. It's like 20s, you know, you learn all the shit not to do. Yeah. 30s, you start really applying it and coming into focus of who you're going to be for, you know, as an adult. And yeah, I feel very comfortable with where I'm at now. And so that's got me really motivated and excited to like, okay, here are the things that we want to venture out and do from here. So yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I feel very fortunate.
Good. Well, everyone's doing great. Season 2 on Netflix. Well, both seasons are on Netflix now. So everyone who has not checked it out, go check it out. I'm excited to see what's next on the docket for Stephen Colletti. Obviously, you're a new dad. Congrats on Baby Rhodes.
Thank you. Yeah.
And there's just 2026 it's been already a big year for you. So I'm excited to see what the next half has in store for you.
Well, you know what? I think there's some retreating into family time. And good. We've been
good for summer.
Yeah, there you go. We've been out there, you know, trying to get the word out, and everyone's doing great since we're still an independent show and we don't have a big, you know, marketing budget. So all that we can do to get out there and even, you know, speaking with you today, mm-hmm. Be able to talk about it, I appreciate it. It helps Indie TV. It helps our show. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the summer to, you know, it's been a crazy little run the first half of this year, and need to spend some time with family and just want to hang out with my wife and my kid and then we'll get back at it. But appreciate the support. And
yeah,
I have to say, when you're going into a show like Traitors and you know that there's a lot of folks watching, you can't help but see, you know, some of the reactions and things that folks are saying online. And it's like, that's the part of the fear that creeps into like, okay, what's going to be the reaction? And I mentioned earlier how there was, you know, talk about my Chiron on the show being one thing, but that's, you know, that's silly. It's not like it's a major deal. But you're wondering if you put yourself out there for folks to judge you in a certain way or say things. And there's a lot of mean folks out there, and it could be a very dark place. But I've seen some stuff that you put out there and talking about the show. You have a lot of fun with it, and are fair and just, you know, not go unless somebody really deserves it, not going at somebody in a certain way. And you know, I think there are a couple of things that you said that were positive, and I was like, it was nice to see that, and it felt nice, and it made me feel comfortable even more with the position of being on that show. So thank you for what you said out there. While also some very funny bits and entertaining stuff. So
well, thank you for saying that. That's how I try to be. That's how I try to be. It's like sometimes people deserve a little bit of a whacking.
Sure.
But ultimately, I try to come at all of these shows with just sort of like a sense of informed humor, I guess is how I would put it.
Yes.
And like, yeah, and I think you had a great showing. I genuinely do. So again, a lot to be proud of for you.
I appreciate it, man. Well, it was great chatting with you.
Yeah, it's been really nice connecting with you. And hopefully we get to do this at some point again in the future. But have a great summer, and we'll
100%.
Talk soon. Yeah.
All right, sounds good. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.